chill out, what you yelling for? Lay back, it's all been done before. And if you could only let it be.
Hey, and welcome back to Extra Features Interview. Today we have a fabulous film, Laura Gets a Cat. The directors decided to spend a lovely Saturday afternoon with us. Mike Farrell, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me. It is beautiful here. I don't know what the weather's like there, but
well, it's been good.
Beautiful day.
It is beautiful here too. It's probably 62, and I'm thinking 62. I could be wrong because we're different here.
Right.
It's better today. We had a power failure last night for 6 hours, which kind of screwed me up a few times, but that's the way that goes.
Yeah.
So, Laura Gets a Cat. You wrote it and somebody else wrote it, if I'm correct.
No, just me.
Just you. Okay.
Yeah, the way it works is though I make movies with two other people, Devin Sanchez, who recently became my wife, or I recently became her husband, however you look at it, about a month ago. She and I, along with Chris Prine, we three have made two films together. This is our second film. So the three of us have various roles and various strengths and weaknesses, but we kind of look at it as the three of us as a team who can do anything and everything all at once. But both films I wrote, Laura Gets a Cat I wrote, and Laura Gets a Cat I was the director on, and Chris Prine is the editor, Devin being the co-producer. We all three acted in the film as well.
So let's get in. I thought this would have had a female director. I got to admit, I really thought you embraced the female persona to me perfectly.
Yeah, thanks. I mean, for whatever reason, I've written male and female characters both for a lot. I started out as a playwright. I've been a New York theater actor and playwright for a lot of years and then moved into film. And I've always felt comfortable writing male and female parts without thinking about it too much. I think it's almost getting to the point though where I think my most powerful alter ego protagonist is a female for whatever reason. And it doesn't matter to me. I don't plan on stopping, you know. I don't get hung up on how a male or female would do things. Maybe I just have a feminine side that I'm in touch with.
Well, I'm impressed. Like I said, I would definitely thought the female touch was on this film. And I think most women, I would hopefully agree with me after seeing it.
Yeah, well, we also have Devin who produces the film with us, my wife, and she also would keep us in check if we were off base. And also Dana Brooke, who plays Laura in the film, also is, you know, encouraged to be part of the team, to be vocal about anything if it's like you know, if it's not ringing true or something.
So you start off your film. Well, before we even get that far, how did you raise production value? I mean, you are in New York City or just outside, as you've told me. Filming is everywhere there. I mean, you guys are constantly doing plays, filming, funding. People must be asking for money constantly. So is it harder to raise funds when you're in a major city like that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's hard no matter what. I mean, we American filmmakers definitely envy the Canadian filmmakers that we meet on the road because there's always some kind of program that you could enter into and get picked and, you know, find funding for your film. So that sounds pretty sweet. But here in the good old US of A, that's not a possibility. So we raise money however we can. And this film is a pretty low budget. So it's, you know, it's along the lines of just finding money for anything, you know, we're not talking a lot of money. So we don't have like a lot of investors and a lot of return, and a lot of contracts and stuff. We're just sort of scrappy indie filmmakers still. So there's a number of ways of crowdfunding or saving up or scrapping. And the three of us who make the movies together, we have the benefit of having been in New York for a long time and making a lot of friends and, you know, pulling from our network when we make the films. So we come at it as actors. We know a lot of actors. You know, we come at it as like video makers for this and that, for web series, for corporate projects, whatever. So we know a lot of people with cameras and with equipment. And, you know, if we keep the team small and simple and we're able to pull it together in a way that we think looks very, hopefully, professional. So we're saving a lot of money that way, you know, where people are, are taken care of and part of the team, and we're all putting on the show. And in return, we get a product that hopefully looks slick without spending hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Okay. So okay. Laura Gets a Cat. Obviously, you need a Laura, I would say. It's right there in my title. Now, how did you find Dana Brooks? Like, she is excellent. I love her facial expressions immensely.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, she is terrific. There's no doubt in my mind that anyone could write a movie and place her at the center of it and get something terrific. She and I did a play together over 10 years ago in New York, and since then we sort of stayed in touch here and there. She came and helped out on our first film, 20 Million People, just did a line real quick and went home and was like, thanks a lot. So she had one line in our first film and then ended up as the title character in our second film. We did a screenplay reading before we started production on Laura Gets a Cat, just to try out something new, because I'm always writing, always have new screenplays. And she came and read a part, and I really liked the way she read it. And I thought she kind of has the voice of that I'm kind of looking for right now. So I started writing Laura Gets a Cat actually for her to play with her in mind, and it worked out great.
Okay, because I was wondering, like I said, I think if your lead's not strong in your film here, and which she is, this film would not work. Like, she has to be, assume Laura and assume Laura's mannerisms and do everything that she's going to do throughout the film.
Yeah.
Like I said. So let's start off. You start off with a nice ocean. How cold? I always have to ask, how cold is it? What did you do to her?
Okay, that ocean was cold. But, you know, as director of the film, I feel like it's my responsibility to get in first. So when we were there, I got in. You know, if you're going to direct someone else to get in a cold ocean to get a shot, I think it's only fair you jump in that ocean. So, you know, it wasn't too bad. You know, it wasn't like frigid. It wasn't Arctic, Canada cold, you know. It was Wrightsville Beach or Carolina Beach, North Carolina. So it's pretty warm, you know. It was still May, so it wasn't quite as warm as it was going to be, but we shot it down there in North Carolina on the beach, and it's not too bad. You know, you can handle it. She sacrificed for her art.
Now, I want to ask where your idea for the podcast book guy is. He's my favorite character. I would like a whole movie of that guy.
Yeah, that's an actor, Jason Kravitz, who's done a lot of high profile stuff, and he's, you know, very well recognized actor. We're lucky to be friends with him now at this point, and he's very gracious to come act in our little films. But that scene, I mean, probably writing it like is just like when you're it's an imaginary scene for those who haven't seen the movie. It's a daydream or dream, I guess, of Laura imagining herself being interviewed in a podcast. And I think it just, you know, where it comes from is the ego. The ego is a big theme in the movie, and her having to learn to drop her ego somehow. And for me, I think it's just the self-exploration of, well, I listen to a lot of podcasts. I walk my dog. I walk to work. I end up listening to a ton of podcasts. And I think it's just natural for someone like me, who's like an actor and likes to be the center of attention, to imagine myself being interviewed. So that's like how, and then, you know, in the movie, it all falls apart on her. So it plays for laughs. I think a lot of people like that scene.
Well, I think you set up that scene great when she's listening to the podcast, and then he asked her, oh, I like listening to you while walking your dog. What's your dog? And I thought that was great. That worked so well for me. I laughed. And I think that opening scene sets more than the ocean scene of what we learn about Laura as the film goes on.
Yeah.
That she's constantly daydreaming and constantly looking for something.
Absolutely, yeah.
And do you think, I'm not going to ruin the end, don't worry, I know we're still early. Do you think she finds what she's looking for? Because I don't feel she ever does.
Well, I think for me, it's sort of like, it's about smaller steps, you know, it's about a longer journey, and it's like, you're not going to solve. I mean, it's a, I think usually what I write is people say it's romantic comedy, and in a way it is, but like it doesn't fall into that, like, will she get the guy or something, and then you get an answer, oh, okay, and they live happily ever after. It's more about the realistic, relatable journey of life where it's like, you know, I don't feel like I have this, I don't feel like my career is taking off, my romantic life is taking off, whatever, and it's more about making those small steps that really might give you some kind of change, might give her some kind of change, for the better in life. So I think, you know, she doesn't necessarily find everything she's looking for, but I think she's on the right path, you know, and that's part of the title, Laura Gets a Cat, is like you're taking steps into sort of, she's taking steps into dropping her own ego a little bit and her expectations and what she thinks she should be doing at her age, which is 32. And instead just like, you know, starting out small, taking care of something like a cat and getting her shit together, basically.
Okay, because I wrote down, you write Laura as a very stable person, her vibe. I put vibe in quotes. Because when she's out with her friends, she seems very stable, you know what I mean? But she's always imagining herself to be them. So then I wrote, I find Laura very self-unsure, but that's internal. Is she afraid to show that side, do you think? I think she is.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty fair assessment, yeah. I mean, she's caught between the movie opens and she's got one friend who's extremely stable because she's in a suburban house with two kids and a marriage is going well and, you know, whatever. And then her other best friend is a musician on the cusp of fame and living a kind of wild life where it's like, you can tell she goes out and parties and stuff. And so Laura is kind of caught in between, like, well, what, these are both like kind of extremes in a way. What am I doing? You know, I don't have even a stable relationship or anything, but, you know, her vibe is just that she's not meant to be some fancy rock star traveling the world, you know, like we all like to imagine ourselves like we would do that. But like in reality, it's, you know, we get tired. I would get tired. I just need to sleep.
What do you think Laura's book's about?
Well, that's a good question. No one's ever asked me that before.
Well, I was dying to know because, I mean, you want to classify authors in some way.
Yeah.
And I couldn't classify her because I said I don't know enough about Laura. I mean, yeah. I know she has relationships. I know she enjoys having sex. But I don't know what she's writing about. I was dying to know.
Well, in my imagination, I haven't thought too hard about it, but the book is called The Ends of Things, and I feel like the book is about relationships, and as much as I write sort of realistic relationship comedies, I feel like Laura would also be caught up in that world. So her novel would be about probably a girl kind of like Laura, dealing with the ups and downs of relationships and traveling around and trying to find herself and, you know, a sort of realistic relationship with probably a lot of comedy and stuff. That's my guess of her novel, you know.
I know. Okay. I'm not going to go any further because I'll ruin the end if I keep going, so I'm going to be quiet.
Okay.
I want to discuss Laura's friends, Scott and Alice, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
Where did Dale's two characters come from? You must know these people.
I mean, it's all like a combination of people, including myself. I mean, I find like, I try to stay a little, I try not to be too conscious of what inspiration is when I'm writing, so that I don't overthink it. But I think after the fact, then when I look at it and analyze it, I kind of see a lot of myself in those characters, you know. I think there's always, in New York City, being someone like in your 30s, there's always this opportunity now to like look back, and everyone moves here. I mean, the cliche is everyone moves here in their 20s to be some kind of artist. You know, I mean, I've waited tables for years with every kind of artist in New York City, actors, singer, dancers, you know, visual artists, and everyone's here trying to make a go of it. You know, they were the artist in their hometown or something, and they always, you know, it's exciting. And then at a certain point, you know, kind of fame and fortune doesn't come, and no matter what kind of success you have, you sort of have to make a choice. All right, well, but I am growing up now. I hit 30, I hit 31, I hit 32. So what am I? You know, it would be nice to have things maybe, or not, you know, I'm still struggling to get anyone to notice me. And a lot of people, it's a very individual path. And I think to pass judgment on anyone's path is pretty messed up, actually. That's definitely not something I have an intention to do, but there's a lot of people who kind of say, oh, I'm going to go get a real job, or get a husband who has a real job, and I'm going to raise kids, and I'm going to have a house, and I'm, you know, it's more of a regular life. Like, I'm not going to be whatever on TV, on, you know, Alvin Ailey Dance Company. Like, it's just not going to happen. But then there's always those discussions of, are you still an artist, or did you kind of cash it in, or you know, are you less of an artist, or are you like, you're trying to prove that you're an artist? So, I mean, I think those two characters are just two kind of suburban people who are still trying to figure that out as well. And that might be an interesting spin-off screenplay, actually, to write of those two characters.
Oh, I think they're fascinating. Like I said, I do find them fascinating. And Scott is one of the producers on the movie.
Yeah, that's played by Chris Prine, who is the editor of the film and also one of the three of us that form the team that make the movies.
Did he pick that role, or did you place him in that role?
I don't remember exactly how that went down. I don't know. I mean, sometimes I think we all have a say, you know, if we're all making the movie together, if it was something he wanted to do, he would express interest. If it was something he totally didn't want to do, he would say, I'm not doing that. And that would be fine. You know, that no one's, it's pretty democratic among the three of us.
Well, that's great. Now let's discuss your locations.
Okay.
I do like to discuss, how did you find them? Cause you have a beautiful coffee shop. I love the coffee shop.
Oh, cool. This is definitely part of the indie filmmaking, 101. Is if you're going to be scrappy and make low budget films, then locations are probably the most important thing. You know, besides the people, of course, but, like when I write, maybe because I come from theater, that I'm writing for a specific place and sort of specific people. So I try to keep it in the parameters. The coffee shop, NJTEA, New Jersey.
Oh.
And they let us come in and shoot there. You know, we're just neighborhood people, and we rely on the favors from our friends and neighbors. You know, a lot of those apartments are basically our apartments and our friends' apartments and stuff. The parks are parks we go shoot at in kind of guerrilla style. You know, we keep it small. The location in North Carolina was actually one of the impetuses for the movie, because my friend owns that house down there in the beach. That's where I grew up mostly, is Wilmington, North Carolina. And I was hanging out with a friend of mine who owns that house in on the beach, and I asked him if he would be open to letting me shoot a film there. And he's also an actor friend of mine. So he said, yeah, sure. So I started writing the script that Laura goes down to the beach for some reason, goes from New York and jets down to live at the beach. So it all came from location, the whole idea.
Let's discuss the I guess your comedy relief, the guy that lives on the beach, kind of.
Yeah, Dave.
Does Dave exist?
Not really. I mean, I don't have a Dave in my life. I think it's just like it's just a character that's sort of for Laura to come across as a little bit of a little bit of a warning, a little bit of like you could just kind of brush off responsibility and people and just sort of like enjoy day to day and stuff. But where does that end up? I mean, if you kind of don't find that balance, you know. So I think that's, you know, the actor is a friend of mine that I went to college with who lives in North Carolina, Brian Mullins. And I, I thought that Brian would be terrific at this part, so he nailed it.
He did. But I would argue even Dave gets his life together near the end of the film.
Website, mail.google.
Okay, what was that?
Dave gets his life together near the end of the film, I find.
He got his own place. Yeah, a little bit, a small victory for Dave. Why not?
I think Dave needed something. I like Dave.
Yeah. I had to throw him something. You know, he's moving out of the garage.
Okay. So I would love to discuss more of the film. I'm going to kind of leave it at there because I've kind of touched on all the big stuff, except for one small thing, but I think I can ruin this part. She gets a cat.
Yes. Spoiler alert. Laura gets a cat.
Which it tells us. So, okay. I have a weird thing. The cat's real name is Pepper, and you call it Pepper in the film. I did look. See, I do pay attention to these things.
Yeah.
Whose cat is Pepper?
Well, that's Chris's cat. Chris Prine is, our producer. That's we wanted to do some casting for a more mangy kind of scrawny cat, but it just did. It's just so hard, and you know, on our budget level, to go find a cat that will, like, you know, that we can get and that will behave and whatever. You think it might be easy, but putting together a film, it's so difficult. So we shot, you know, we shot it so that she's a kind of runaway cat, and it was difficult getting her to not be freaked out by being in the location. It's actually hard to shoot a cat, but we had to. It's the entire film rests on it. So when she We just went with whatever we were given. So when she hid under the couch, for example, then we're like, okay, let's shoot her hiding under the couch. Then that's what she's doing, you know? And she had to be in a quiet room. She was a very temperamental actor. She had to be in a quiet space. And I was in a different room because my energy level was too anxious to keep her calm. So I was texting the direction to Devin so that Devin would be in there. Okay. Whispering the direction to Dana, who then had to, like, coax Pepper into just staying cool and staying, like, calm and everything. So, but we got it. You know, I'm pretty happy with what we got. And actually, it ends up being pretty funny. And if you're a cat lover, it's quite a payoff.
Now, my favorite thing, because I like to eat, I want to discuss how you fed your crew.
We think it's important to feed the crew very well, you know, to make sure we don't just do pizza and everything. You know, on our level, there's a lot of people not necessarily taking care of the crew. But I think that's super important to make sure that everyone's happy, because a happy crew is really, you know, invaluable in making a movie like this. I think what we learned was a lot of people like to be healthier than you give them credit for. So, you know, a lot of small indie film crews start with Oreos and potato chips, and everyone's just kind of like, you know, can we get some fruit, some avocados or something? So we sort of, you know, every day we handle that and we just make sure there's enough food. And then we go out to actually a good tip for other indie filmmakers out there, an Indian restaurant buffet. Perfect, man. Yeah, it's like cheap. It's cheap and delicious, and everyone loves it. Everyone's happy. If you can find an Indian restaurant, go for it.
Okay, well, now it's time for everybody's favorite game, Fun Questions. At least it's my favorite time. So, since you're a playwright, what's your favorite play?
Huh. Favorite play. My favorite musical is Hair. I know that. Favorite play is, I don't know, what kind of things come to mind? Glengarry Glen Ross. Othello is probably my favorite Shakespeare play. Something by Sam Shepard, I'm sure, but I'm not sure. Cowboy Mouth is a really terrific play by Sam Shepard that I love. I like a lot of Neil Simon plays. It sort of started me at a young age on writing at all, so... Yeah, that's probably a good enough answer.
That's a great answer. What's your favorite restaurant to go to?
I'm a longtime vegetarian, and I don't eat many animal products myself. So here in New York City, we have a restaurant called Blossom. That's our favorite vegan restaurant that I really love. But other than that, I like a good good, like, neighborhood bar, as long as they have, like, a veggie burger or something, you know. I like this place called Teddy's in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. That's a good place, too. So those are a couple that come to mind.
And this one's really easy. Your favorite film?
The Godfather.
Oh, there you go.
Godfather is just too – it's too good, I think. I grew up watching it so many times that I think it's got everything. Good acting, good filmmaking, good story. I mean, it's tough to beat. I also like Annie Hall a lot, though, more in my wheelhouse of things that, you know, because I'm not going to write the next Godfather, let's be honest.
No, but you might write the next Annie Hall.
Exactly.
I can see you doing that. So tell everybody where they can find this fabulous film.
Laura Gets a Cat's available right now exclusively on Amazon. So if you go to Amazon and search Laura Gets a Cat or go to lauragetsacat.com, it will take you to the link to rent the film. However, we just partnered up with a distributor named Factory Film Studios based out of Toronto who will make the film available on more platforms in more territories very shortly, hopefully. So you will be able to see it on a lot more platforms, and we're excited about that.
That's great to hear. Thank you for your time. You were wonderful.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Have a good day. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hey, I just want to say thank you for listening to this great interview. We have more on our website at www.extrafeatures.ca. And if you enjoyed it, can you please go to iTunes and leave us an iTunes review and like us on our Facebook page? Thank you.